currently we have a perfect time and a perfect storm, I would say, in order to build out the tools to provide those tools to TradeFi companies.
How do you provide collateralized non-custodial loans using Bitcoin's sound money fundamentals and technology? We speak to Debify CEO Max on this topic. We hope you enjoy, and as a reminder, this podcast is for educational purposes only. If you like the content, please remember to follow, share, or drop us a comment, as this all helps us greatly. Lynn and Israel are partners at Baselayer Advisors, where they employ their strong network of venture capital partners and startups to connect investors with unique opportunities within the Bitcoin innovation space. Alongside this, they support founders with their strategic growth and fundraising goals. Visit our website's advisory section to learn more. Welcome to Build with Bitcoin. I'm co-host Israel Munoz, joined with co-host Lynn Bairstow. Today, we have the pleasure of welcoming Max Kai, CEO of Debify. Welcome, Max.
Hey, guys. Thank you for having me.
We're excited to get into today's conversation. Before we get into the Bitcoin-backed lending side, which we have plenty to talk about, Max, we like to start the conversations with a little backstory. So in this case, a little bit more about you. We were just discussing before the call that you came from the traditional banking side, but as much as you'd like to share, tell us a little bit about what got you into Bitcoin and why this is so important for you.
I was a banker, private banker. I was wealth manager, asset manager. I had a longstanding career in the banking space. And then at some point, one of my customers, I think it was 2014 or something around that, we were sitting in a like very posh, private banking room where you meet your customers. Sometimes you drink some whiskey, expensive ones, and et cetera, et cetera. And he was like, showing me his phone and saying, Max, 5-10 years from now on, I'm not going to need you anymore because you see, there's a new thing called Bitcoin. And I'm going to send 15,000 to my friend who's now in Brazil. He's going to receive it at almost no cost, in a matter of minutes. And he just did a transaction on a mobile wallet we did a video call or something like that. And he confirmed that everything is fine. Money is there. And I was like, thinking this guy is crazy. I mean, there's some kind of scam, obviously. But I was into fintech already at that point. I really enjoyed everything that was built around, potential for neobanks, improving the legacy finance system, the legacy banking system. And I started to research Bitcoin. And at some point, I just realized, okay, that's the thing. I mean, it's a crown jewel of fintech because it's a money, it's a code, it's a community, it's whatever you can imagine, basically. And a year later, he offered me a job and I said, like, yeah, I'm quitting. And I just did a leap of faith and never looked back again. There's a saying that there's no former KGB agents. So I think there's no former bankers. So eventually I turned back to the banking side and now I'm building for the bankers. So yeah, but I had a very interesting journey with, building for hardcore Bitcoiners globally, specifically for emerging markets, with HODL, contributing to that project and, also educational part with Baltic Honey Badger, the conference that we started in 2017, which is considered, I think, the oldest running Bitcoin-only conference in the world. And I started from the hardcore roots, and now I'm trying to bring those hardcore roots to the like more TradeFi type of people and TradeFi industry.
The experience that you described is peer-to-peer when your friend sent it to his friend in Brazil. And so it eliminated the middleman, which I think until you actually do a transaction on Bitcoin on a Lightning wallet or a Bitcoin wallet, you can't appreciate just how magical it is to eliminate everyone else and to not ask for permission or not ask for approval or not have to fill out a form and just transact that way. And so obviously peer-to-peer has, and your work with HODL has kind of informed a lot of what you're doing today with Debify. Can you talk about why you feel the peer-to-peer aspect is so important and how you're bringing financial services and banking services to this market today?
I think we have a great opportunity, I would say historical opportunity with Bitcoin to reinvent how people interact with like banking system or any other type financial institution out there. And we just need to use it. We just need to build tools. And at some point, it's written in a white paper, peer-to-peer, no middleman, you know, being between, but it's mostly between private individuals, right? And nobody, I would say not many people or builders thought about maybe we should eliminate middleman between institutions as well. Because that opens a bit different, set of opportunities. And I think what the back history of Debify, how we came into that, is that I've been contributing to HODL, and in 2020 HODL launched a lending platform which was using multisig, and anyone could become lender, anyone could become borrower. And there has been no middleman. HODL just provided the infrastructure for people to go online and to, you know, to borrow or to lend money. And at that point, the team at HODL been approached by several bankers who said, like, we want to use the same approach. I mean, we want to tap into this non-custodial Bitcoin-backed lending. Because another reason why I'm doing what I'm doing is that I do hate the concept of custody. I think that self-custody or collaborative custody, if we're talking about financial products, is the way forward. Because we've been, like, as a community, we've been multiple times burned with Mt. Gox, FTX, Celsius, BlockFi, you name it. A lot of people lost money. And so HODL team was approached by several bankers, and we quickly realized that HODL needs to be for, like, peer-to-peer, pleb-to-pleb, you know, for people out there in emerging markets, doing some micro-lending or trading some small amount of Bitcoin, buying and trying to survive. And we decided we need to build something for institutions. So obviously, few steps forward, we created Debify, which is on one end, you have institutions as a lender or as a liquidity providers, and on the other hand you have private individuals, Bitcoiners who have Bitcoin, they don't want to sell it, or you have companies that have Bitcoin on the balance sheet or in Bitcoin treasury, they have treasuries in Bitcoin, they also don't want to sell. So we decided we need to bring all that institutional liquidity, not necessarily from TradeFi. We have also like Bitcoin companies who never thought about lending, but they have some excess liquidity and they want to put that liquidity into work. And they do understand that there's like always over collateralized Bitcoin backed loans, and they like that aspect and that concept. But also the idea is to bring as much liquidity as possible from traditional markets to Bitcoin backed lending, because eventually Bitcoin is a super collateral. That's the best collateral you can get there. You know, it trades 24/7, it's highly liquid. And, you know, it's secure, it's transparent, it's programmable, it's global. You don't need to go elsewhere in order to issue a loan. While you sit in Switzerland, you can issue a loan to some guy in Brazil or to some person in Mexico or to some person in Canada or in Japan. You know, that's amazing thing about Bitcoin. And I think more and more TradeFi investors and more TradeFi lenders or trade finance institution needs to understand that Bitcoin is the best collateral you can get there. So if you're into lending, the best option you can get, the most secure way to lend out money is using Bitcoin as a underlying asset for your loan.
And, you know, Max, if we can maybe dig a little deeper into this this lending model that you guys are working on, specifically the liquidity side, the liquidity providers, because I think maybe the demand side is easier to understand for people. You know, people sometimes need loans. That's a pretty basic concept. I think that's easy to digest. But, and you touched on the fact that you had some institutions and banks approaching HODL. Can you help listeners understand why these traditional banking models that kind of, you know, they today heavily depend on this custodial model, why they're starting to lean into a technology that allows a non-custodial setup? I mean, what's their motivation behind it, and how is that liquidity aggregation going for you guys? I mean, give us a little more insight.
So we're basically launched a year ago, and we started with three liquidity providers. Some of them used HODL previously and had an extensive experience, but most of them were new. We directly approach family offices, hedge funds, private funds, asset managers, banks. We work with them, we talk with them. And then if we move to the reason why they're interested in that, is that A, there's a demand for this service. I mean, if you will talk with several Swiss banks, you will understand that they have a lot of customers who has Bitcoin. And you will understand that some of these customers would like to borrow from them, but they don't want to borrow providing them the full custody of the collateral. They want to do the collaborative custody model. And actually, that was the reason how we've been introduced to several banks that we're collaborating with now. Their customers actually said, you know, guys, I'm going to introduce you both. This is our banker. This is Max or someone from our team. I would like to borrow from you guys, but I want to do it through DebiFi. I want to hold at least one key to the collateral. So there's clearly demand. Another thing they do understand, that's the future. I mean, Bitcoiners, as price goes up, Bitcoiners are getting wealthier and wealthier. They're getting more sophisticated. They're getting more risk averse. Nobody wants to gamble on their Bitcoin. Nobody believes the stories about, you know, we're going to generate some yield on top of your Bitcoin. Nobody wants to do that. Not anymore. It's 2025. Hopefully, we're not going to repeat it. We're going to repeat to some extent, but hopefully not at an extent where we had an FTX, another FTX. So there's a demand. And another thing is that they see that actually the rates for Bitcoin-backed lending are higher than the rates for most traditional assets. I mean, a lot of Bitcoiners doesn't like that. They say, you know, it's a pristine collateral. It should be low as 1% or maybe 0.5. But come on, guys. I mean, people do understand that you don't want to sell your Bitcoin for a reason. They do understand that you're probably waiting for Bitcoin to hit 200K, 500K, 1 million. And they do understand that you are happy to overpay, not to sell your Bitcoin. They will charge you for that opportunity, for that uptick opportunity, you know, because I'll did an example, I think, half 6 months ago in my Twitter. I posted like people are complaining about lenders on the Bitcoin lending market offering rates like around 40%. Yeah, they do that. But if you would borrow, for example, in August 2024 with 40%, and you would be able to close your loan in October with like huge increase in your basic asset value, and you would just pay like 40%, but you would get like 86%, because at that point the price action was crazy actually. I mean, demand, and obviously they can earn an attractive interest on top of that. And also the case with over collateralization, they do understand that there's always an underlying asset which they can liquidate or they can get in their pocket. So basically there are several reasons. I would say we're still very far away from high level of mass adoption. But as we speak with several banks, as we speak with asset managers, as we speak with different family offices, each month we're getting there. So it's, you can actually see the difference on a monthly basis. You know, a year ago when we were in the meetings with several big digital asset banks in Europe, they said, okay, yeah, maybe. Now they're like writing to us, they're calling us, they're saying, okay, let's explore a collaboration opportunity. Let's do this and that. We want to be in that market because there's a lot of requests coming in for that.
Max, can you describe a little bit more detail the collaborative custody model that you use? Because it is kind of unique to Bitcoin where you can actually retain part ownership or access or visibility yeah. into your asset and still give the lender the comfort that they've got control to. Yeah. So the whole kind of multi-sig contractual aspect of Bitcoin technology, I think it provides this really unique lending collateral. So would love for you to explain that a little bit deeper.
Build with Bitcoin is a proud affiliate partner of River, a Bitcoin-only financial services company that I've personally been using for years. I really enjoy the strong focus they have on security and reliability, which ultimately leads to peace of mind. I know you're a big fan as well.
I am. I feel so confident referring people to River. In addition to what you mentioned, also they've got US-based phone support, which I think for somebody who's less familiar with the space or used to personal service is really helpful. In addition, they have a private client services division. So if you're looking to invest $100,000 or more, they have a special suite of services designed for you, whether you're a high net worth individual, a family office, or a trust. I also really appreciate the continued improvements they make in the back end so that reliability and security continues to be really apparent.
They additionally also have US dollar cash deposits paid out in Bitcoin. They have a yield product for that, which is an interesting alternative way of accumulating Bitcoin. Overall, fantastic suite of services. If you're interested in onboarding or opening up an account at River, use partner.river.com/buildwithbitcoin for personalized onboarding.
Yeah. So basically, every time the contract is created on the Debify platform between lender and borrower, we take their public keys and also public key of fourth key holder or authorized key holder, which is a company called AnchorWatch. And we create a unique multisig on the public Bitcoin blockchain with four keys, and you need to have at least three keys in order to move collateral from that escrow. So either it's a good ending of the contract, which is like borrower repaid and we need to return the collateral back to his wallet, or it's liquidation or it's a dispute. But nevertheless, you need to have at least three key out of four in order to move collateral. So through Debify, the multisig is created. Every time it's a unique multisig, it's not reused, it's not within our wallets, it's on a public Bitcoin blockchain out there. And then borrower sends his collateral to that multisig. As soon as collateral hits the multisig, we inform the lender, okay, it's safe to send fiat or safe to send stablecoin. So lender moves fiat and stablecoin to the address or to the account of the borrower, and basically contract moves into progress, and it's like 6 or 12 months. It's going to be 24 months actually in April, and you know, it just goes. And at the end of the contract, borrower hopefully repays the loan, and when he repays or she repays the loan, we just co-signed the release transaction back in his wallet. That's how it works.
And as far as, and you touched a little bit on this, Max, but maybe, you know, maybe if you can give us some insight into the averages of, you know, the duration, is there a minimum or maximum for the loan right now?
Minimum duration is 1 month. The maximum duration is 12 months. We're going to increase the 12-month period to 24 months. We're actually willing to increase it up to 36 months. So hopefully during this year, we're gonna move into that. The minimum size, we have some loans being done with 5,000. We have a default, let's say, minimum size of 25,000, but some of the lenders, they said, like, we want to test it out with the smaller amounts, and we allow them to do so. So you can, at the moment, you can actually borrow with five up to, not less than 5,000, but you can do it. We're actually going to move to micro-lending space as well soon, so you will be able to borrow even less. But nevertheless, the maximum, I'll be honest, we in a public offer list, we have public offer list, and there's like maximum size of 100K, but we also have private offer list, which is we have a list of lenders who we know. They're not publicly available, but if we have a request for high volume loans, let's say someone wants to borrow $500,000, we can always connect borrower and lender, and they can create a private offer, which is not visible to the public offer list, and they can negotiate some terms on their like between themselves. And yeah, there's no minimum on the private offer list. We saw very significant loans recently.
This is available globally. Any jurisdictional restrictions at the time?
It is actually available globally because Debify itself is a tech provider. And as long as lender is sure and knows what he or what they or what she is doing, again, we only work with institutions as lenders. There's no private individuals, right? And we do... When we onboard the institution, we do sign a separate agreement. We do KYB, so we do due diligence on them. And yeah, it's available globally. Just in some markets, there's no fiat currency available because, like, let's take a Canada. We don't have currently liquidity providers in Canadian dollars. As soon as we will have them, we will be able to onboard them and they will be able to issue loans in Canadian dollars. Same goes for any currency out there. Of course, we have, we don't work with sanctioned countries. So you need to go and check the terms of the services. But nevertheless, yeah, it's available globally. And as we onboard more and more liquidity providers from different parts of the world, I hope it's going to be available to like many, many Bitcoiners out there. That's the goal.
How would someone become a liquidity provider? How do they connect with you if they have an interest in participating?
We basically have a form on our website, which you can click on the button, become a lender, fill in, and then we will be in touch with you in a matter of hours.
And these loans, Max, I mean, when you're speaking to fiat currencies, are we talking about traditional fiat or stable coins or is there a mix?
We have currently stable coins, USDC and USDT, and we have euro, dollars, and Swiss francs.
Switching to the borrower side a little bit, I mean, Israel and I have been tracking, and of course, we talk to a lot of Bitcoin startups, and many of them have Bitcoin in their treasury and as an asset. And we're just seeing a trend where we just feel that pretty much every company should have it, especially startups, because we think it'll ultimately reduce their need to raise future funding rounds. But you need liquidity, you need cash flow, you need markets. So are you seeing this trend at all, or are the companies that are borrowing through Debify platform, do they tend to be Bitcoin companies? Are you seeing more traditional companies with Bitcoin assets?
No, these are mostly Bitcoin companies. Luckily for us, there's a lot of them now. And luckily for us, the Bitcoin treasury strategy is being adopted by multiple companies and more companies adopt that. And these are mostly Bitcoin companies. Could be also like digital asset companies. I mean, those who have different varieties, or they traders, or they do like some stuff with altcoins as well. But mostly these are Bitcoin companies.
What, you know, what are you focused on as leader of the company right now, Max, as far as, you know, the immediate to midterm roadmap? I mean, and I'll explain kind of why I'm asking this, because I do think, and I'm certain you agree with this, that it's a pretty unique opportunity and time right now to kind of remake a lot of the financial markets. This moment doesn't come often, right? Where we're able to kind of remake an entire system. And along with that comes, you know, thinking about user experience, you know, risk mitigation management, all the services that you guys provide. What's your focus right now, Max? I mean, I imagine the liquidity side, you're heavily focused there.
Yeah.
You know, this needs to grow into a a very liquid market on the supply of these loans, and that just creates benefits for everyone. So maybe if you can expand there, but also on the user experience, I mean, what feedback are you getting from the borrowers and from the lenders? I mean, how is that shaping up?
Yeah, well, on liquidity side, we're always looking for liquidity. Even if we have enough liquidity, we know that there could be like a spike in demand, and in a matter of weeks, there will be not enough liquidity. So we're in a peer-to-peer, you know, the complicated thing is like always balancing the supply and demand. So there's not much. So there's like balance in between those two. You know, there's enough supply and there's enough demand. That's number one, of course, you know. And regarding the product, well, we're focusing heavily on so that platform is actually more easy to use in terms of user interfaces and for borrowers, because eventually our customers are borrowers, because borrowers are paying us origination fee if there's a successful loan created. And we want to focus more on the mobile experience, because we have like Debify is basically an app plus website. So you use an app for onboarding and for security reasons, and you use a website when you want to engage into contract, or if your lender published some offer. So like website is more for utility and app is for security, let's say like that. So we're definitely focusing on mobile experience, and for lenders, I mean, we need to build an institutional grade solution, not only in terms of security, but also in terms of usability, you know, providing a crucial data, providing some extra tools, providing flexibility. I mean, it sounds very like vague and like macro level, but it's actually very complicated. It's not only about providing good security, it's also about providing user experience. And I actually see that more and more Bitcoin startups, they start to realize that, you know, the years when we were focusing and building stuff for geeks who will understand and who will use nevertheless, because it's cool, it's secure, it's, I don't know, it's nice, and there's like amazing underlying tech. These years are like passing by. So now we need to deliver more, because we need to build for geeks, but actually so that these tools for geeks can be also absorbed by normal people, normies, as we say. And yeah, if you're going into institutional space, that it will take you even on a higher level, because these people usually demand even more, because they provide money and they want to have certain value for that money in terms of what kind of service you will provide, what kind of usability you will provide. So we're focusing heavily, you know, on three things, you know, liquidity, improving service for borrowers, and significantly improving services for lenders on the user experience side and on the providing necessary information to them.
I'd like to ask you a little bit about what happens if there's a dispute. I think, I absolutely understand the benefits of non-custodial and lending and borrowing peer-to-peer, but I think it's going to take a little bit of a mind shift for the people who haven't been exposed to Bitcoin for as long to really get used to not having an institution in the middle to help protect them or to act as a referee or whatever. So how would a dispute be handled on the Debify platform?
We have a dispute resolution team, and again, we have a very extensive experience in peer-to-peer, more than 6 years with our background in contributing to peer-to-peer projects. So yeah, and another good thing is that everyone being KYC. I mean, we don't like KYC as a Bitcoiners, right? But if you're an institution and you're going to provide fiat to someone, you have to KYC the person or the company. So usually when everyone is KYC, there's not much of disputes happening, to be honest. Usually all our disputes is that someone forgot to press one button, or you know, borrower send a repayment, but for whatever reason, bank in the middle, you know, block the repayment, and it's just extra days to handle this situation. So we don't see actually disputes where borrower is claiming he didn't receive money while lender actually send money to the borrower. So, I mean, it's a very rare occasion, but we have a dedicated team for that. And there's a certain set of rules that you need to obey in order to use us and properly collaborate with the counterparty.
And Max, I know it's, you know, you guys are fairly young. You mentioned roughly a year that you've been active. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Can you give us a little insight into the typical user, you know, maybe geographies? Where are the borrowers coming from?
It's actually mostly developed countries at the moment. So I would say it's like all the regulars, you know, Europe and Switzerland and US probably. The case is that we don't know the borrower side. We do. So the borrower KYC and KYB is on the lender. We provide lender with all the tools, but we don't know who actually. We might request that information if there's a dispute or something like that, but usually we don't know that. Also, I know that there's like Latin America being very active. And again, I'm super bullish on that market. But at the moment, it's mostly developed countries. We envision that as soon as we will launch several products that are currently on the pipeline, including, as I mentioned, the micro lending, there will be more and more emerging markets joining. Because like currently, the size of the loan is pretty much high for most of the emerging markets.
To shift a little bit and talk about the journey of founding Debify, you talked about identifying the need, but when you thought about putting together the product and the team, and obviously there's a lot of technology and sophistication and security and those protocols that go with that, how did you self-fund? Did you raise investment? How do you look about growing Debify as a technology company?
Yeah, we raised two fundraisers. So we did two rounds, pre-seed and seed. And so basically we've leveraged our networking base because, as I said, we're not new into the market and people know us for building those sophisticated non-custodial solutions on top of Bitcoin. So we just, it wasn't bootstrapped. It was like fundraise. We did the pre-seed to build an MVP. We built an MVP and then we raised the seed in order to, you know, operate for a certain amount of time. Yeah, so that's our journey. You know, very, very traditional, very, you know, boring, I would say, to some extent.
Well, and I noticed some of the names on your cap table or that are investors, and you've got like the who's who of Bitcoin focused VCs. And Israel and I, in addition to talking to founders that are building with Bitcoin, we also have interviewed pretty much everyone on your that's invested in you. And I, you know, and it's a small group, but I think I can see where they can really want to support Debify because you could provide additional liquidity to the other portfolio companies that they have. Yeah. And it kind of works as a circular. How closely do you work with your investors? Do they get involved with strategic introductions or what do you look for in terms of an investor?
Yeah, we usually, that's a very good question, to be honest. I had an experience back in the days with two different types of investors, I would say. Those who provide a lot of money, but they don't provide any added value in terms of, you know, networking, advisory, et cetera, et cetera. And those who provide smaller checks, but they put a lot of efforts to bootstrap and to help you with the company. They connect you with necessary people. They help you with advisors. And as we have an experience, we actually choose, we always prefer having some strategic investments, meaning that you can provide us, of course, we love, like everyone wants to raise, obviously, a lot of money. But for us, it's more important to have certain value in going forward. I mean, we always look what you can provide, I don't know, as advisor or in terms of networking, in terms of connecting us with people that we need. So we kind of, we're a bit skeptical on the size of the check. We're more like happy about if you actually engaged in the, not into day-to-day operations. We don't need you to be engaged as an investor in day-to-day operations, but at least from time to time, you know, talk through and help us out and, you know, connect us with the people. So we look for that, to be honest, more rather than, you know, raising a lot of capital and, you know, then just being there with that capital and not being able to, you know, reach out to the people that we actually want to reach out.
Congrats, Max, because I mean, Lynn and I, as Lynn was referring to, have gotten to know a few of those funds in your cap table, and we can speak quite highly of most of them. You know, it's super interesting right now. You see the VC, the Bitcoin venture capitalists focused on, you know, kind of incubating a lot of these new business models on top of Bitcoin. And, you know, we speak to this in other episodes as well, Lynn and I, that it'll be interesting to see Series A forward, you know, a little more of the traditional VC world starting to get into this space inevitably, as, you know, I think the three of us understand Bitcoin's just kind of, it's seeping into kind of the broader, you know, business and
world. Yeah.
It's a bit inevitable. And of course, as people begin to understand what Bitcoin is, you know, the properties of this hard money, et cetera. It's just such an interesting moment right now. And for you as a early stage company, how do you handle resources regarding a Bitcoin treasury or not? I mean, it can be this complicated dilemma where on one side you understand that Bitcoin has a very positive cumulative growth rate, but on the other hand, you're trying to grow and build a business and you have liquidity needs yourselves. Do you guys incorporate Bitcoin into your treasury? How do you think strategically with regards to fundraising?
Yeah, I would say that we currently, all those rounds that we had weren't like a huge amount of money that we raised, and we haven't been able to maybe allocate a lot to the Bitcoin, but our strategy been always like, we earn in Bitcoin. So every time the successful loan is created on the DeFi, we earn origination fee in Bitcoin and we spend fiat. So usually we, at least before that, maybe in the future it's going to be changed, but we raised in fiat, we spend in fiat, we cover all our operational costs in fiat, and meanwhile we just stack the earnings in Bitcoin and not selling them. So it's like more, I would say it's more earning Bitcoin rather than buying Bitcoin. And probably next fundraiser, we're going to allocate certain amount of treasuries into, because we're going to have that opportunity. And the next fundraiser are obviously going to be bigger. For now, we just stack through our activities and we just spend fiat that we raise from VCs. That's it.
Speaking of future plans, I mean, I know you're young, but not. I mean, you've been in development for quite a while, even though the market is kind of, I think you were in a beta for a while and working on this. And obviously the background that you had and the experience with HODL HODL. But what's your plan in terms of future fundraises and how do you look at that?
We've been actually proposed and approached by several VCs who are in the space, obviously, for fundraising. I'm gonna keep a little bit of intrigue, but definitely, if you want to scale, if you want to move, and I believe that for Bitcoin lending, it's a great opportunity at the moment. I mean, we have a perfect timing to build a proper infrastructure. And then we're going to see a wave of TradeFi people coming into the market, and they will require that infrastructure. So currently we have a perfect time and a perfect storm, I would say, in order to build out the tools to provide those tools to TradeFi companies. So we're definitely looking into fundraising, and because we understand we need to move faster. However, we've been, I would say, I'm not going to say how much, but DeFi been revenue generating business since week one. So there's a demand for our services, and there's a good, good growth and good increase. So, I mean, it's not just because there's like market environment at the moment is very good for fundraising. It's because we also have certain underlying results that VCs are looking at, and they're saying, okay, that's very interesting, and surprisingly interesting for some of them.
And that really brings up a whole aspect that I hadn't thought of before, but because Debify is really more of a technology company that matches lenders and borrowers, I mean, I think that this cycle in Bitcoin, borrowing against your Bitcoin is going to be one of the big use cases, because to your point, people who've been holding Bitcoin for a while have now had this incredible appreciation. You need to live your life. You don't want to sell it. So how do you extract some of the use out of the appreciation in your Bitcoin? But now with the recent changes in the banking laws in the US, banks can hold Bitcoin. So they're obviously going to want to get involved in lending against Bitcoin and holding it, so they could come to you and you could white label your technology for some of these larger institutions. And that's an incredible opportunity that really helps them fast track it and also helps Debify really grow at a super rapid pace.
Yeah, we're actually already doing this in Europe with some of the banks. We're in talks of doing some stuff for them as well. Again, cannot disclose everything. Sorry for that, but just going to be boring here.
But I think the intrigue is fun.
Yeah. I mean, I really, I'm happy that banks can now custody Bitcoin. And the reason for that is that that's the first step. Next step will be when they will see a lot of customers who will say, okay, I custody with you a small amount of Bitcoin. I want to borrow from you, but I want to do it through collaborative custody. Because this is what eventually been happening when we started our negotiation in Switzerland. Because like Switzerland is ahead of the whole world in terms of, Bitcoin, I think 10 years ahead, because like in Switzerland, you go outside a train station, central station in Zurich, you will see a huge banner by some kind of bank saying like, you have Bitcoin, come to us, open a bank account. You know, we're not afraid of digital assets. We're not afraid of Bitcoin. We want to have you as a customer. And eventually they went the same way. So effectively they are allowed to custody and they're doing this, but at some point, their customers started requesting extra additional services like, hey, I have fiat with you. I have some Bitcoin, maybe custody with you. I want to borrow now, but I don't want to borrow by sending money to your custody. I want to borrow in collaborative custody way. So for us, the better regulation, the clearer the rules for the banks, it's way more better. So we're just at the very beginning.
And, speaking to Switzerland, Max, you are about to open an office space in Lugano, I believe. Can you touch a little bit more on that?
Well, we've been one of the first investments of Plan B Fund, which is a fund behind the initiative or integral parts of the initiative of Plan B. And they also have a Bitcoin hub in Lugano, which is Plan B hub. And we've secured the office space there. So we're going to move into and have a proper office in Lugano in Switzerland. Amazing place. If you've never been, I strongly suggest you to go there. They have a great conference. I'm just going to briefly shield them, I think it's going to be October this year. I strongly suggest if you're into like institutional adoption, Bitcoin, you should go there. Definitely. It's one of my favorite conferences. Business-wise, one of the top conferences out there.
Yeah, I went to the Plan B in El Salvador earlier this year and it was fantastic. It was a really great experience. So yeah, it was good to see. And then I know, your team distributed, you work remote. Do you have any opportunities? It sounds like you're growing really fast. A lot of our listeners might be interested in making a shift from TradFi or TradTech into Bitcoin. What kind of opportunities might you have on the Debify team for talent?
The team is distributed. We've been doing this since day one. We are used to that, but actually it's very complicated to have a distributed team. So every use case is individual, unfortunately. I don't have any like magic advice to give, how to do that. But I mean, the great thing about Bitcoin is that since it's a global movement, global asset, global whatever, you name it, global money, you can literally, most of the Bitcoin companies, they actually don't insist that you go to the office and you know, go to office space every day. You know, actually, a lot of Bitcoin companies do prefer distributed work, and they do prefer when the people that work for them, they travel, they do a lot of other stuff. They go to the conferences as well. So I think it's part of the culture with Bitcoin. So it's not necessary. Sometimes you want to have an office, of course. But in most use cases, I think everyone prefers just, you know, having a digital nomad life. It's complicated. For the manager, it's really complicated to manage the people remotely. But again, we have more than 5 years experience and we have our tricks. And for us, it's just okay.
As we wrap up, just want to say congratulations and thanks for coming onto the podcast, of course. But we're very excited to see Debify's story, you know, kind of mature, if you will. I mean, I think you guys are just so uniquely positioned to lead this non-custodial, well-structured Bitcoin-backed product. I mean, the technology is there. I think a lot of it is just a little more on the, you know, education and as these more traditional institutions understand what Bitcoin is as money, as a technology. I mean, you guys are just poised to be growing quite a bit, I think. You know, Lynn and I see a few trends as we talk to different startup founders in the Bitcoin ecosystem, from micropayments to maybe the AI integration. There's a few, all the layer twos that for, you know, peer-to-peer payments. But we've touched on this before, Lynn and I think what the biggest immediate opportunity and just growth area for Bitcoin is the financialization, right? TradFi, you know, crossing lanes with this distributed peer-to-peer system that Bitcoin is. So all that to say, we'd love to have you back on a few months from now or whenever that is to hear some more updates. But excited for your journey ahead, Mac.
Thank you very much. You'll be surprised. So I hope I'll be able to join you at the end of the year and share some exciting updates. I mean, it's coming.
But Max, where can people follow along with your journey or learn more about Debify? What platforms? And we can add them in the show notes. And also, will you be speaking at any conferences? I'm sure Baltic Honey Badger, and that's coming up in August, correct? And anything else?
Yeah, Baltic Honey Badger, definitely. I'm going to Prague, BTC Prague. I'll be there in June, hopefully. And nothing else. But you can follow us on Twitter or X. It's at Debify.com in one word, Debify.com. And my hashtag, my tag is KDonM. So feel free to follow there. Also LinkedIn for more traditional people. But yeah, definitely Twitter is number one.
Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you very much, guys. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Build with Bitcoin podcast. If you found benefit in what you heard in this episode, we'd truly appreciate it if you would like, share, or leave a comment on whichever platform you're listening, as this helps others find us, which is especially important for a new podcast. And as a reminder, our content is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only and is not to be considered investment advice or a recommendation to invest in any company or asset mentioned in the podcast. Build with Bitcoin is a proud affiliate partner of River, a full-service, 100% reserve custody, Bitcoin-only financial services company. For your next Bitcoin purchase, use our exclusive link, partner.river.com/buildwithbitcoin. Thank you sincerely for being a part of the Build with Bitcoin community.